Welcome to the Fantasy Golf Insider Podcast. I'm Jeff Bergerson, joined as always by Zachary Turcotte.
How's it going, my friend?
It's great. It is U.S. Open week, so get excited. It's the big time, man. It's the week that we look forward to all year, right, Zachary?
I think so. We'll see on Sunday if that's the case.
Should be exciting. We're doing this a little bit early and getting it out this week because we're so excited. Prices have dropped on DraftKings. Odds have obviously been out for a while now. If you want to do all your research, be sure to join us at fantasygolfinsider.com. You can do all of your research on our tools, see who putts best on Poa grass for this week, see who plays well consistently at U.S. Open events, which are typically on similar courses with similar difficulty. We know the course this week was played back in 2018, so we can reference that. And then you can build a ton of lineups for DraftKings on our lineup optimizer. So be sure to check us out. We'll each have our columns out as we typically do every single week of the PGA Tour season. So be sure to check us out, fantasygolfinsider.com. Zachary, before we get into the big event, which everyone wants to hear about, let's just talk a couple of minutes as it just wrapped up a little bit ago, the Canadian Open. Saw a lot of big names there previewing for U.S. Open this week. Nice to see Bud Cauley come through with a victory. It's been a long, long, long time for him. Long time coming.
239 starts. I think I sent you that picture. They had the going back to like 1983 or whatever it was, the longest, most starts without a win on the PGA Tour of active players. And Bud Cauley was fifth on that list.
Who was number one on that list? Was it Patrick Rogers?
He was number one by a long shot, too. Yep. He's got quite the lead. He might not be overtaken for a long time because he's at 330 starts. Yeah, Hubbard, all guys you would probably guess, like if you didn't know, you'd get Mark Hubbard is next at 277, and he nearly had one a few weeks back. Bo Hosler at 245, Sam Ryder at 240, and then, it was Bud Cauley at 238. So on his 239th start, he gets a win, which is great for him.
Yes.
He's dealt with injuries. He had the car accident.
Terrible accident. Yeah.
Nearly ruined his career, basically. Yep. And it's been a slow comeback, but the last couple seasons, you know, he's been a guy who's you've started to notice a little bit. He's been in our columns here and there through the last year. So it's great to see. Those are probably my favorite wins on tour each year. Guys get very emotional. Their families are out there. He's got two very little kids that were out there with him, just kind of overwhelmed by the moment. And that's great. You really don't see that too often in sports for somebody like that to come through. Cause you know, in golf, you're really no better than just whatever happened last season. And unless you can, you know, kind of keep your card, you could lose your career in a hurry. So it's a real big deal when guys like that are able to, you know, to pull off that type of a win. So, so good on him. Great win for him. A little bit checkered as far as the results for the rest of us. I think it was a little bit of a frustrating week fantasy wise. Some things that went on that you don't really see all that often. I know for you personally, you get smacked with Brooks Koepka's withdrawal today. You want to tell us about the lineup that you had with Brooks on it?
I felt really good going into the week that he was going to pop, and I had an outright on him. Felt good about 25-1. And then after day one, I was like, he is locked in. He's ready to go. Day two was fine. And then Saturday, it all came unglued. And then he pulled the typical Brooks and Ditchtown because he didn't give a shit because he wasn't going to win. So really hurt a lot of my lineups. I had him in 40-50% exposure. So one lineup I had was him, Fitzpatrick, Cauley, Potgieter, Suber, and Kiefer. And that one in the mini max finished 28th, which is a amazing considering Brooks didn't even play the final round. So I think if he would have played, if he would have done well, if he wouldn't have crapped out on Saturday, that would have been in the mix to win that thing.
Yeah. When I saw that today too, I knew it was going to affect you. I knew you had written him up. I knew he'd been, you know, one of your main plays for the week. And so as soon as I sent you the withdrawal, of course he happened to be on your absolute best lineup.
And
killed your team. For me, I had my own special bit of fun this week. We had I had Eric Cole on my lineup who pulled a full Keegan. And if for those who have maybe only been with us for a few years, this term actually goes all the way back to Keegan Bradley, who led after the first round of a tournament many years back and then missed the cut on Friday. And so whenever that happens, and it happens maybe once every couple of years or so, not all that often, but we saw it this past Friday with Eric Cole, who went from 6 under after the opening round to completely missing the cut. Very strange. He had been on an absolute tear, 4 of 5 top 10 finishes. So he'd been playing great, opened the tournament really well, and then, yeah, just completely fell off on Friday and missed a cut. So that one felt pretty nasty. That pretty much killed my lineup immediately. And then the rest of my team kind of collapsed too. So at least it didn't hurt quite so bad as it may have. It you know, when everything kind of goes wrong with your main cash lineup, then at least when you have something that happens only once every few years, you're not feeling quite as terrible about it. So that was a little bit frustrating for me, but overall I still thought it was a pretty good event. Had a great finish today with Kali pulling off the win. And I know you've been kind of following Jackson Suber for the last little bit here. I know that he's been somebody who's been in your lineups a handful of times.
Yep.
So he was another guy who's been kind of coming on strong lately. I think you've even had outrights on him, if I'm not mistaken, at different points. So that was a pretty good call. I gave you a little bit of an early shout out on Friday.
Oh, that one?
I think I texted you. I said, "Hey, that was a pretty great call there on Ben James."
Oh yeah, Ben James. Yeah.
who was leading after the second round?
Yeah.
And it was one of those things where I just thought, of course, you know, of course, after we talked about him on the show. And I said, well, you know, you just never really know what's going to happen with these guys. We've seen, you know, guys like Blades Brown come out and do really well, but then we've seen plenty of other guys who, you know, they've had their struggles. And so immediately he's in, you know, first place after the second round. And I'm thinking, that's great. My egg on my face again. But then just as you would kind of expect over the weekend, the third round, things got nasty, didn't really finish all that much better today, ended up in 54th place. So first to 54th. We saw a little bit of the talent and a little bit of why we should be keeping an eye on him going forward. But then we also saw, okay, this guy is still, he's still young. He's still a rookie. He's still got a ton to prove in the years ahead. So, you know, interesting to see him out there as well.
Let's dive into the main event this week. Why everyone's listening, let's talk about the course. Back to Shinnecock Hills Golf Club, which is in New York. This is actually the sixth time it's hosted the event, dating all the way back into the 1800s, but the most recent was 2018, as I mentioned before. Bunch of familiar names in that, on that leaderboard in the top 10: Tommy Fleetwood, Patrick Reed, Xander, Ty Hatton, Justin Rose, who are in this field. So guys we can reference. You can look back at the other dates. You're not going to find that was 2004, 1995. You're not going to find any names, maybe a couple old guys, but just the type of player that succeeds here. And it's generally, we see the same thing every year on these long, difficult, grueling U.S. Open courses. Takes a certain type of player to succeed here. So be sure to reference our tournament history page, which shows U.S. Opens and who typically plays well on these types of courses. The course was renovated in 2013. It became a Coren Crenshaw course with the renovation. It's a 7,440-yard par 70, so it's a beast. It's got tons of length to it. Now, it kind of looks like, when I looked at the holes, that the fairways are on the wider side, but when you factor in how fast they're going to be, it kind of narrows it down by that, because you're going to have a ton of rollout and stuff. So balls ending up in the rough, which should be grueling as it was in 2018, so expect long rough. You're not going to be able to get off the fairway a whole ton and succeed. Not going to just be able to bomb away. Greens are POA. They'll run fast, 12 plus on the stimp, and they're extremely hard to hit. So be sure to factor in scrambling around the green play as well. Outside of U.S. Open courses, Zachary, what other comp courses are you using for this week?
Oh, outside of those.
Outside of, I use Pinehurst and Oakmont. What else would you use besides, like, U.S. Open courses?
I mean, you can use some of the PGA Championship ones that are out there. So any of the ones that we've had over the last few years for, like, the PGA Championship, I think you could use a course like Aronimink. I think that one's probably not bad.
How about Torrey? I used Torrey.
I used Riviera. So yeah. I threw those both on there as well. And, you know, those obviously have the POA, both on the longer side, challenging types of courses there. So yeah, those both got factored in also. So the PGA Championship courses, the U.S. Open courses, I threw in Riviera, I threw in Torrey Pines. I think I ended up with about 10 courses or so in my comp course model this week. And then once Aaron gets that updated, probably tonight or tomorrow morning, once all those stats come out, then we'll have that in the system for you and ready to go.
Sweet. Let's take a look at the pricing this week on DraftKings. Again, we get a very expensive Scottie Scheffler. Are you paying up for Scottie this time around?
Nope. No chance. Nope. Zero. Can't do it. They made him even more expensive this week.
Doesn't make sense, does it?
No, it doesn't. I guess you could make the argument, wow, you know, they take the pricing is down to in the 5K range, but no, there aren't really any guys that I want to play in the 5K range.
Nope.
So that doesn't really help me all that much. And it's just really challenging. Even among, like, the 6K guys, there are not a lot of real standout value plays down in that range where you think, oh, I can pepper in 2, 3, 4 of these guys pretty easily with Scottie. And I just don't think you get a lot of value there.
You can easily roster him. It's just, do you want to? Is he that much better than Rory as an option this week?
Hasn't been this year.
No.
Yeah, he's been good, but yeah, we've seen it over and over and over. He has one win going back at, was it the Amex? I mean, so that's, you know, 5 months ago or whatever it was. And he had 3 straight seconds, but yeah, the last few not great. I mean, if he's outside of the top 10, like he has been a couple times, and he's not even going to be close, he's still going to be popular, right? So he's still probably going to have 20-some% ownership, at least around 20 or so, like he carries in all of these events. But even if he does pretty well, you're gonna have to have, he's got to win, and then you have to find 5 other guys to make it work. And you really just don't have a ton of funds. You're right, basically at 7,000 for your other 5 guys. And there are some very good names in that 7K upper 6K range, but you're gonna have to get a little bit lucky. You know, you're gonna have to have a guy like Gary Woodland's gonna come through, or Adam Scott is gonna come through for you. Harris English, some of these guys, all of these guys together are all gonna have to get through, and then you're gonna have to do pretty well with them on the GPP side. So.
It's worked for us, like you said, for 5 months.
All season long.
Eventually he'll win, but it's like, okay, that's all right. We've won a lot.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Yeah. So I think that's definitely the way to go for Scotty. I probably won't play Rory either. I don't know. He just hasn't looked all that inspired to me since winning the Masters. It just feels like a repeat of last year. He got that big win and then he kind of coasted the rest of the way, which is still going to be a pretty good season for him. But, you know, again, 12-2, I want him to look like he's fired up, like he's playing for everything. I haven't seen that so far. What do you think? Do you think that he pulls it together here and makes a little bit more of a run? Or
I never know. It's impossible to predict Rory's motivation. I mean, it's been his biggest problem throughout his entire career. He's said it multiple times. He's not motivated during certain periods of time or for certain events. Who knows? I just think that, what is it, $2,700 difference from Scotty?
Yeah.
It is worth it. I'm guessing you're going in on Rom, right?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, at least he showed us something at the PGA Championship. We're like, oh, okay.
Right.
You know, it's something there for him. You look at his history. We talked about Torrey already. That's a spot where he's done very well in his career. So that has been a style, of course, that's been great for him. He's typically been very good at the U.S. Open. Obviously, he's very buttoned up over on the LIV Tour. If I'm going to go with one of the LIV Tour guys, it's going to be Rom. I mean, Bryson's been terrible so far at both majors so far this season. I feel like what's happening on the LIV Tour in terms of its finances have become a bit of a distraction for Bryson. He's just not really sure about what the future looks like over there. So even with the wins, he's got, you know, two wins at the U.S. Open. So these are courses that he tends to play very well at. But yeah, I just think for me, his game just looks off right now. So I think probably Rom above 10K. And then Xander at 10,100 are probably my two favorites. Again, Xander is just he's very good. These bigger events, tougher fields, tougher tracks. That's where he plays his best golf, and he's just been a complete stud at U.S. Opens. I mean, his record is really pretty unbelievable. 9 of 9 making the cut. His worst finish is 14th. I mean, that's exceptional for all the different courses that they've played at over the years. 7 top 10 finishes there. So yeah, probably Rom, probably Xander are my favorite plays on that upper end. Anybody else are you looking at? Are you maybe leaning towards a guy like Cam Young, or has him falling off the last couple of events shaken you away from him?
I don't have room for him. I went Rory and I was going between Rom and Xander. I elected to go with Xander because I do own some Tommy shares as well. So I'm pairing, like I can pair a Rory and a 9K guy. It'll either be Fleetwood or Oberg or a Xander Oberg type of combination there. So I don't own. And then after what Brooks did this week, I don't know. I mean, he won it here at Shinnecock in 2018.
Does this look like an opportunity? I mean, with him withdrawing with a hand injury, doesn't that sink his ownership to like 5% or less?
It could. Yeah, it could. Because
usually
you jump in on guys.
Usually you're pretty fearless with those types of plays. But do you think it was actually an injury, or do you feel like maybe his hand hurt a little bit and he just wanted to get the heck out of there?
He wanted to get out of Canada. I mean, it's tough because, I mean, we witnessed his demise firsthand, and he killed us in Boston when we were out there literally walking with his group and his mom.
Yeah, we were putting on a little bit of a show that day.
When he fell to absolute pieces and screwed us. So
I think we literally fell to the ground at one point.
When you say fearless, I mean, that's truly pushing it to the test. Because
he'd just been on fire all the way up until that event. And then just...
Yeah, I know.
It was special. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, he really hasn't been quite as much big game Brooks.
No.
Since his win at the PGA Championship a couple of years back.
Like it's it doesn't feel like the same addition. But no, you're right. It probably is a buying opportunity, as others will be like done with the guy.
Yeah.
But actually, he wasn't that highly owned in GPPs, which was even more crushing. I ended up being like quadruple the field in exposure, which really surprised me. I thought he'd be owned higher than that, but he wasn't. So maybe he is 5% owned this week. You might be right.
Yeah, probably very, very low. Maybe it may just be worth listening to the interviews. Maybe he completely shakes it off. Watch close. I mean, maybe he would. If it's a real issue, he'll actually withdraw. If it wasn't that big of a deal, he'll be fine. I mean, he was in like 40th place today, so you know, clearly he was not anywhere near contention. Could have just been a precautionary thing. I don't know, but I'd much rather own Ludwig at 9,200. Brooks gets 9,400 just based upon the fact that he has the two wins here, but. Ludwig is clearly the better play overall for what he's done this season. Just a smattering of top 10 finishes.
Yeah,
we've seen him win on tough courses. We've seen him another guy who has won at Torrey Pines in his career. So, I just love his ball striking. His total driving off the tee is exceptional for this style of a course. It's where he really separates himself from other players. Long iron play as well. I really like Ludwig there. How about the 8K range there? We're getting a pretty good discount on a guy like Matthew Fitzpatrick coming off of a very kind of a quiet second place finish up in Canada. It was good to see him rebound there a little bit. Hadn't really played that well at Memorial. He'd had just been okay. He made kind of a late charge at the PGA Championship to finish 14th there, but certainly not quite as strong as the run of three wins in a second and five events a couple of months back. But, he's a former U.S. Open winner back in 2022. And that one was also out on the East Coast. I think that one was in Massachusetts. So he was a winner there. Had a little bit of a rough season last year, was just kind of fixing his game at this point before he got really hot for the rest of the summer. But I think I'm in on Fitz. You just look at like what he has been able to do in terms of his ball striking. His iron play has been really good. Putter's been a little bit cold, but it seemed like it got a little bit better this past week. So I think I'm quietly encouraged there. But I like that price. He's come down a little bit, 8,900. I think he's somebody who's definitely in play for me at the top there. What do you think?
Do you remember the show Temptation Island?
I'm aware of it. I don't know that I ever actually watched that one.
The 8K range is my temptation island this week. Uh-oh. Because of the price. The guys who are in it that are generally not in the 8K range. So Colin Morikawa at 8,500. Yes. Very tempted. But, I mean, the range of outcomes for this guy is like withdraw or top five. But it's available for 8,500 this week. Of course, Victor Hovland plays well this week in Canada. He's at 8,100, just enough just to tempt me and tease me.
Yeah, it's so Morikawa, just such a strange player the last 2 years. And then last year just got shaken up by the media, and that seemed to kind of throw him off the rest of the year. It felt like at the beginning of this year, okay, he wins at Pebble Beach.
Oh, he was on fire.
Yeah, top tens in the next two. Then he withdraws from the Players, fucks everybody over. Then he's top 10 at the Masters and top five at RBC Heritage. And then the last three events, just garbage at Doral, garbage at the PGA Championship, and really pretty mediocre result with a 29th place finish this past week at the Canadian Open. And who knows, maybe he was just using this one as like a little bit of a tune-up event, because that does happen too. The week prior, you're never really sure exactly what to read into when these guys play that way.
But a guy who has won a major championship, a guy who consistently plays well at U.S. Opens.
He's won a couple of majors, right? I mean, he's won the Open and the PGA Championship. So yeah, I mean, he's clearly set up to play well on this style of course. He's had pretty good success, 5 straight top 25s, couple of top 10s in there. Yeah, I just really don't. I don't know. I don't know if I trust where his game is at. The price is certainly right. Putter has been the problem of late for him. That doesn't necessarily usually sink a guy at the US. The greens typically play so crazy and so fast that even the really good putters are going to have some trouble here. So it actually probably tilts a little bit towards the guys who don't necessarily putt as well, but are really good ball strikers.
He has not won a US Open.
No, he has not. He won the Open and he won the PGA Championship.
Yeah.
So he's got those two. So yeah, this one he has not won yet, but it seems like his style of game should definitely translate for this, this type of course.
What are you liking in the 7K range?
Well, I guess before we drop out of there, I think I'll probably have some Henley shares at 8,000. That just seems like a really fair price for us. You look at back for he's been a guy over the years. You don't necessarily think of him as being a guy who would necessarily handle longer, tougher courses well, but he's been pretty good. 5 of his last 6 starts, he's been in the top 25. He's been in the top 10 the last couple of years. You know, obviously coming off of a win a few weeks back, a very impressive come from behind win late to steal it in the playoff. And then he looked pretty good at Memorial as well. I just think 8,000 is a really nice price for a guy who stays out of trouble off the tee, which is great, which you need at a course like this. Is kind of mid-range iron play really good as far as like proximity is concerned, tends to have a pretty good stable sort of short game. Yeah, 8,000 just seems like a really good price there. And then you kind of briefly touched on Victor Hovland at 8,100. He had a third place finish this past week. It's been a weird season for him. Again, another guy who's been very difficult to gauge. Didn't play the previous week. He withdrew at Memorial after winning it a year ago. Looked pretty healthy. 8,100, though. He's been a player that you've been on quite a bit over the years. Is Victor in your player pool this week?
Not yet. No. Like I said, I was tempted. I haven't pulled the trigger yet, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like so many of these guys in this range, you kind of feel like you want to play them, but it's really challenging. You know, you look at like a guy like Rose is 8,400. You think, oh, that's not bad. And then you look at his history at the U.S. Open. It's a little rough over the last 6 years. Or even like JT, he's been really good, 8,300. I mean, I'll probably find some room for him in my player pool, but – yeah, 3 straight missed cuts.
Yeah,
at the U.S. Open, that's always scary to me because even though it's a different course every year, we do tend to see guys who handle it better than others, who get a little bit less frustrated than others, who are able to kind of handle some of the eccentricities, I guess, of each of these courses and how tough they end up being set up over time. So yeah, it's an interesting range. Dropping down into the sevens, you got Patrick Reed sitting there right at 7,900. Is that enough of a value for you to be in on him? He's looked pretty good so far in his first 2 majors this season.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in on him at Augusta every year. I'm rarely in on him at U.S. Opens, and he hasn't really had huge upside finishes. But again, you know, for 7,900, he's fine.
Yeah. So. He finished 4th here in 2018. Not that that really matters. 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And then it was at least one.
That was his best finish ever in U.S. Opens, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. He definitely hasn't been higher than that. He's had a handful of other top 25s. I guess I'm quietly encouraged. There's 7,900. I think that's a pretty good price. It's just since I'm not necessarily really in love with that 8K range, he'll probably be a guy that makes the player pool. Wyndham Clark, have you seen enough out of him over the last 7 weeks? I think I have. I think he's been pretty good. Did you enjoy his trolling of the Canadian fans?
Yeah, with the jersey thing. Yeah.
That was pretty good. I have to say, I'm not typically a big Wyndham Clark guy, but for him to put the Jack Hughes jersey on there and then to drill it to 5 feet and make the birdie, oh my gosh, that was That was pretty good. That was pretty nice. He's another guy with a real interesting history here, because yeah, obviously he won 3 years ago. I think that one was in LA. But beyond that, the other four starts, three missed cuts and a 56th place. But you look at him over his last seven starts here, six top 25s and a win, and he was right in the thick of it again this past weekend. That seems like a pretty good price for a guy who's fifth here in strokes gained total over the last 16 rounds. And if I had to guess, he's probably up there pretty high as far as like the last 24 as well. So
where did you say he won?
He Wyndham Clark won at what was the week after the PGA championship?
God, I don't.
Was that at the CJ Cup? Yeah, it was the CJ Cup, right? He had that huge final round. He shot like a 60 in the final round to overtake Siwoo Kim. Remember that one?
No.
He ended up finishing like minus 30 for the week.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, so Siwoo shot like minus 6 in the final round, but I feel like Wyndham ended up shooting like 10 under or something crazy to end up winning by 3 strokes. Just hit everything. Putt wise,
I was wondering where he won his U.S. Open.
Oh, I think it was L.A. I think it was
L.A. Country Club. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm with you.
So that was 3 years back. Gosh, I can't believe that was 3 years ago now. But he's been playing exceptional. I mean, he's been the form wise, he should be a play. It does make me nervous that U.S. Open wise hasn't been as good. You almost feel like just dropping down and grabbing a guy like Sam Burns, who's been a little bit more consistent the last 4 years and two straight top tens. And even though he doesn't have the win, his form has also been exceptional over the last few months there. Ball striking seems to be starting to come together for him. Short game obviously is something that's always going to carry Sam Burns. He's been consistently one of the top putters on tour for like the last two or three seasons. But he's been really solid. What do you think about the defending champion there, JJ Spahn? He's quietly been coming on over the last few months as well.
Very true. Very true. I think this range is pretty good, actually, yeah, with JJ Spahn. Patrick Cantlay, 7,300. I have interest in that, too.
Yeah, I don't mind that. He's been pretty consistent as far as U.S. Opens. He had a third place finish a couple of years ago where he was in contention late when Bryson ended up winning and Rory ended up choking that one away. He was right there. But yeah, his game has been pretty solid over the last couple of months. I'm kind of surprised to see him down here at 7,300. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, even though he hasn't been, I guess, like amazing this season, he's still looked pretty good. I think, was he 12th at Augusta? That wasn't bad. And 17th a couple of weeks ago at Memorial. So it certainly hasn't been like he's been missing cuts or anything like that. I think he's somebody that I tend to target at these types of events because off the tee, he tends to be pretty strong. He's always had pretty good control over his long iron play. So he tends to be a pretty decent fit for this type of a course. So.
And I just like experience.
Yes.
Opens too. I always highly weight that too. So.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think that's a pretty good value. Anybody else down here in this lower 7K range that's
Aaron Rye is another. You mentioned Henley as not being your kind of prototypical type right. of long, tough course grinder. Aaron Rye is another kind that fits that description, who's just more of an accuracy-based player. But
yep,
he's been okay here in his couple of appearances, a 33rd and a 19th.
We saw disappointed me last week and missing the cut on my cash game team. So that was a kick in the nuts there, of course. But yeah, I mean, prior to that though, he had four straight top 25s, including the win at the PGA Championship, and he looked good at Memorial. So I guess I think I kind of take it in stride a little bit. We didn't see the immediate letdown. So I'm hoping that, the missed cut last week, that's going to be the only one. Kind of bounces back, but 6,800. I think that's a pretty fair price for him. Do you worry at all about the guys who've been kind of popular for me in recent weeks. Obviously, Chris Wright at 6,900. He slipped back. You were a little pissy with him on Friday. I think you thought he had missed the cut.
Yeah, he should have. I thought that cut line was going to end up at three, but it ended up at two, which was surprising.
So he ended up 60th this past week. Do you get a little bit concerned with his lack of experience at major championships?
Yeah, probably.
Because we did see, and that's the same thing, you know, with Alex Fitzpatrick, he's been fantastic in everything except for the PGA Championship event where he finished 75th. I think at 6,600, he's just playing too well for me to back away from.
Okay.
That's too good of a price for a guy who's looked really good at some tougher courses. You know, we talked about before, he finished in the top 10 at Doral, finished at the top 10 at Quail Hollow, finished in the top 10 at Muirfield, all in his first start. So really the only blemish is Aronimink, and that threw off a lot of guys. That was a pretty tough course. Now he could go out there and get blitzed, but there just are not a ton of guys down here in this range. I'll probably play Adam Scott. You mentioned before you like experience. Scott has been having a really good, really solid all-around season. He's been pretty consistent. He did miss at the PGA Championship, but I think that's probably about the only cut that he's missed all season. We talked about some of the comp courses earlier where he has had some pretty good success in his career. So I think, you know, a guy like Adam Scott there at 66 makes a lot of sense. Harris English for me makes a lot of sense
at
6,700. Yeah, he's not always with a high finish, but he's had a couple great ones. He did just a ton of top 25s throughout the season. I'm really kind of surprised to see him down here at 6,700. But yeah, if you're looking for like experienced guys, don't want to take the big risks. I think you could pair up a guy like Harris English with a guy like Adam Scott. Then you'd have at least a reasonable chance that they would each end up making the cut. Down in this mid 6K range, any sort of standout names for you that you'll be looking at? It gets a little bit thin, I think, once you get below Alex Fitzpatrick at 66.
Yeah, I was just going to say Alex Fitzpatrick's in my core. I own a few shares of Thigala at 6,400, Ryan Fox, 6,300. I think these you could have a little smattering of around 10% in your core. I own 5% of like Grazerman. Outside of that,
maybe a little bit of Tom Kim. He's shown just a little bit of life lately.
Yeah.
He's been okay. He's had a couple decent, couple top 25s. He's 4 of 4 making the cut. 6,200 is you get some pretty good price savings. I certainly wouldn't own a lot of them there, but.
Said his name too, Gary Woodland at 6,600.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Woodland is a guy I would look at. I think he's a very compelling GPP play.
Yeah.
You know, US Opens. He's a former winner, won at Pebble Beach back in 2019, held off Brooks Koepka there in that final round. Hasn't been amazing at U.S. Opens throughout his career, but he's had a little bit of a resurgence this year. The first half of the season the first couple months of the season were just terrible. But, you know, once he got that win, he has continued to look pretty good in recent starts. So wasn't great at the PGA Championship. Obviously, he missed the cut there, but you know, kind of bounce back with a top 10 after that. I think he's definitely a guy that you could look at this week as well.
A ton of money going in on outrights this week. So let's take a couple of minutes, look at the odds for outrights. I'll give you a second to pull that up, Zachary. I have found my outrights are kind of living in that 40 to 50 to 1 odds range. I clearly like guys more than those to win, but I don't like the odds. We both like Xander quite a bit. We're at 18 to 1 on Xander. John Rahm's 12. That to me is, I don't like the value there.
You can get him at 14 on Bovada. You can get Xander at 20. I like Xander there at 20. I think that's a nice price. Yeah.
Tommy 20? Really? Come on. Give us Oberg 20.
Yeah, they're both at 22 on Bovada. Yeah, they haven't even dropped Brooks yet. How is Brooks still at 25? Come on.
Yeah.
He withdraws with a hand injury? Yeah, it's
I find
it's
myself, really, like you talked about Henley. He's 40-1. I like Goddard at 45-1. Siwoo Kim, 45-1. Patrick Reed. 50. You know, all of these guys are 40-51. Even Sam Burns, if you wanted to stretch a little bit, he's at 35-1.
Burns, you can get him. Yeah, Bovada, you can get him at 40. Cantley, you get him at 55.
Oh, I would lock that in.
Yep. I mean, yeah, those are not bad prices. Yeah, it's just it's too tough for me to go on this low end for guys. Like, yeah, I just don't have any interest in betting Scotty at 5-1 there. Even Roy at 10. Like, maybe Rahm interests me a little at 14, but that's that wouldn't be bad. I guess Rahm at 14, just given this type of event. But we've seen some weird winners over the last years back. We would have done this podcast and we would have said, you know, hey, you got to pick stars. You got to have stars. You know, we had that run where it was Brooks won a couple of years, and you've had Bryson win a couple times, and Rahm is a winner, and Fitz is a winner. And then we've had Wyndham Clark win in 2023. And then last year, JJ Spahn won, you know, kind of out of nowhere.
It's Patrick out of kind of nowhere as well in US Open.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a surprise. Yeah, because, I mean, you look at his US Open history, he usually makes the cut, but really he's not in contention all that often.
No.
So yeah, that one was just ended up being, you know, really unique for that year. So I do think you can stretch a little bit as far as looking at some of those names a little further down. I would still probably cut it off. I wouldn't be taking guys at, like, you know, 80, 90-1 or anything like that. Maybe cut it off at the 70 range or so for some of the guys that you're looking at. But I would give yourself some
options. It's not a long shot week usually.
No, I wouldn't think so. No, it doesn't strike me as that type. So, but yeah, if you have a chance, try to get your bets in early because the money is going to race as soon as the people start putting their cards out in the next day or so. But yeah, this it should be a good one as far as betting is concerned.
All right. Anything else to mention before we get out of here?
No, I think that's about it. Watch the injury reports, watch the interviews early in the week, you know, see if you pick up on anything from some of these guys. Like I said, that Brooks injury, that'll be the most interesting one of all. It is. I think that would draw, we'll knock him down. If he's at like 5%, I guess I wouldn't mind just taking a 10% stake in him and having double the field. I don't think that would be all that bad, but yeah, pay attention to any sort of injury news or anything that comes out. We don't tend to get a lot of great information in the more peripheral types of events, but around the majors, we do get a little better interviews and a little better reporting. So do pay a little bit of attention on that side of things.
Be sure to jump on board FantasyGolfInsider.com for all of your tools, research, articles, everything, all the information you will need for this week's big event. We wish you the best of luck as we always do, and we'll be talking to you next week.
Good luck.